So how did this all start? I have to give credit where credit is due. The Chizik Mission, Barry Feld. Hi, Barry. Okay. Barry Feld started the Chizik Mission. She's from Cleveland. She was very involved in the JWE and Momentum, which is a Kirov organization. And somebody told her that us from women needed just as much as they do, because we are running homes, taking care of our kids, taking care of our families. A lot of us are running on empty, and we need something to nourish our souls. The Tanya says that the soul needs constant nourishment, just like the body needs fuel. And this is our nourishment. This is learning. This is growing together. This is our connection to Hashem, to each other, to ourselves. And when you fill yourself up, then you can keep giving more. Otherwise, it exhausts you. And it's not... And it's not just about the learning. It's, you could go on tour anytime and listen to everything double speed, and you'll be way ahead of the game in the learning part. But it's learning with people and creating a community. We have a chabura every night. Literally, like, some of them, I don't know their names, but they came from Far Rockaway. Okay, no, they didn't come for me. They came for Folly, but whatever. We could pretend.
But I came for you.
That's true, okay. Thank you. So, Shvat. Today, it's always the question, how is this the Rosh Hashanah of the trees when you look outside and there's nothing going on? It's bare, everything is bare, there's snow on the ground, but we all know that underneath the surface, things are brewing, things are happening, there are murmurings happening, the sap is starting to come up the trees. And that's really what I want you to take away from here. What kind of growth do you want to see for yourself? What do you have to do underneath the ground to make that happen? Do you want to create a relationship? Do you want to mend a relationship? Do you want a healthier lifestyle? Do you want to learn something? For whatever your goals are to grow, take one step, do one movement, create that shift underneath the ground so that next month when you come back, there'll be a change. And we'd love to hear what that was when we come back. Another thing that we actually shared last night on the chat is Shvat, it's really incumbent upon us in Shvat to create happiness. Anyone heard this before? Like, yeah, I never heard this before, and it was such an eye-opener, because why? How do we learn this? Because in Adar, it says, Mishenichnas Adar mar b'misimcha. You increase your simcha. But if you don't have simcha to begin with, what are you increasing? That means that Shvat is the time to create that simcha. And where do you get that simcha from? From learning and from fulfillment. What other kinds of simcha is there? That's true simcha. When you fill yourself up that and create fulfillment, that creates simcha. I want to shout out to Fermi Pollock, also in Cleveland. I don't know if she's there, but she started the Rosh Chodesh gatherings in Cleveland, and she was egged us on a little bit to bring it to Brooklyn. So thank you. Thank you, Hashem, for making this happen. And okay, let me I'll just introduce you. That's it, because you're here. Everyone's here to listen to you anyway. So she needs no introduction, Folly Klein. Or maybe she does. I don't know. Does everyone know who she is? You may know her as Miracle Ride, but that was a long time ago. She's progressed as a healer, as a teacher.
You said healer,
teacher. No. Trainer, teacher.
Person.
Okay, you introduce yourself. Goodbye.
It doesn't matter how often I do this or how many times I've done this. I'm never not nervous standing up in front of a crowd. But for those of you who don't know, that is my mother. And she did the same thing to me at my elementary school graduation when it came time for the yearbook. She's like, here's the yearbook form. Fill out your own ad. She's like, you speak better than I do. Tell everybody about yourself. You know, here's the money. Just fill it out. So thanks, Ma. Some things have never changed.
Maybe I'll be like you.
Yeah, you know, my whole teenagehood, you're like, you never listen to me, you know. Now she listens to me. Now everyone listens to me. All right, welcome everybody. So I'm here to talk about birthdays, particularly my birthday. I've always known that I have the best birthday in the world. It's objectively the best birthday in the world. I was born Shavuos, just before Shavuos. It is the best birthday. It's like the last, what?
I was born Shavuos night.
See, I was born Gimel. Shloshes Yemei Bala, you know, it's the whole thing. You know, it's like, it's school is over, summer is starting, and it's the best weather, there's cheesecake. I mean, I'm lactose intolerant, it doesn't matter, there's still cheesecake. There's all the good stuff, like everyone's happy. Like Shavuos time, everyone is just happy. And I've always just known deep inside. It's also like Memorial Day weekend. So like there's a legal holiday. I've always known that my birthday is the best birthday. And then like last year, I read a statistic that said that everyone feels that way about their birthday. And I was like, no, that can't be true. Like, why would anyone like a birthday in February? That's just dumb. It's just dumb. Like, it's dark, it's cold, it's snowy, and I can't say it's 100% of birthday of people, but like I've polled a lot of people after I read the statistic, and like everybody seems to agree. And I actually have 3 kids whose birthdays are in Shvat, and they all seem to think it's worth celebrating. And I'm not sure. And they're like, my mother was there on Shabbos. My daughter was like, what do you mean? It's always like midwinter break during my birthday. It's the best time and she's going on and on, and I'm like, for real? 3 kids in Shvat, and they all think it's the best birthday. And then my son in Adar also thinks that it's the best birthday. And I'm starting to like question my reality here, because like I really thought that Shavuos is an objectively good birthday, and it turns out that there's nothing objective about birthdays at all. In fact, it's very subjective. I mean, we have Rivki who's smiling, astrology major, she knows. Birthdays and astrology are very, very subjective, and everyone does have a certain something about their own birthday. So everything I thought I knew about birthdays was kind of wiped off the map after I did that poll. So I had to ask myself, so then what are we celebrating? Like, it can't just be that I'm celebrating myself, because I don't obviously have an objectively amazing birthday anymore. So I had to think about, what is it about birthdays? First off, what are we celebrating? What makes us want to celebrate? What is it about birthdays that get us excited if there's nothing objectively exciting about a birthday? So that we learn about birthdays from the trees, from Shvat, from Tu B'Shvat, because in the Torah, in Judaism, that is a birthday. It's the birthday that anything you want to learn it from Torah. Like the Torah sets a certain standard. Okay, so there's a standard about birthdays that we learn in Shvat from the trees. We say it's Tu B'Shvat. Beis Shammai actually says that today is the birthday. Rosh Chodesh Shvat is the birthday of the trees, not Tu B'Shvat, which is interesting. Like, I didn't know that. Like, Tu B'Shvat, you hear, it's like the middle of the month, you're heading into the other side. No, and Beis Shammai says, no, today, Rosh Chodesh, it's the birthday. It's the Rosh Hashanah of the trees. So, it's such a weird time. It's such a strange time for a birthday. It's not like the trees can be like my daughter saying, oh, well, it's Shvat, it's midwinter break, my birthday's always... Like, there is nothing happening for trees right now that would make it exciting, that would make it a special birthday. Shvat is not the time, it's not the season that you would think about trees. Nothing looks alive. And if you didn't, like, know the calendar, you would never guess that anything is happening. But this is the moment that we bless them. We've decided this is your birthday, and now we bless you. Why? What is it that we're blessing when we think of the trees? And in fact, do we even know what a blessing is? I think we all have this, like, concept of what we think a blessing is, right? We have like, you know, the yivarechecha, we have that. We have the like, bless you after you sneeze. We each have a sort of association with the word blessing, but let's go back to the Hebrew source. The word in Hebrew for blessing is bracha. Shoresh, beis, resh, chaf. Like a brecha. There are many different words that are, conjugated, subject, right? Conjugated? Yes, my grammar is failing me a little bit. But like this shorish can make many different words. So you have bracha, brecha, right? You have so many different ways of expressing this word. And a brecha means a pool or a spring, like of water, or the source of blessing. But also, weirdly, in Hebrew, Beis Reish Chaf is also a body part. It's the knees. Birkayim. What? Like that body part, out of all the body parts, when you think of bracha, you're not thinking about your knees.
Only if they hurt you.
Only if they hurt you. And you have, so if you have never thought about your knees before, let's just take a moment to bless the knees. May you never know. May you always have those knees that just take you wherever you need to go without any aches, pains, or, you know, groans of protest. But the fact that these two words use the same shoresh means that they are somehow related. There's something very special linking these two. And I'll tell you what it is. The secret to a blessing requires getting down on our knees. You would think that getting down on our knees is a position of supplication, of prayer, but it is. Blessing is a form of prayer. And when you get down on your knees, where are you going? You're going down. You're going down to earth. You're digging deeper. You're going beneath. You're humbling yourself. And Shvat, as we bless the trees during what feels like the coldest and most barren of time, what is it teaching us? We're blessing, but where is the blessing? It's forcing us to go beneath, to go underground. And that teaches us something about blessing. Blessing is not a response to evidence. It's what creates it. There's nothing outside that is showing us like, oh, trees are going to bloom. There's nothing that lets you know that. I mean, we're in the middle of an ice storm and we're like, let's talk about trees and fruits and harvest. Yes, because when we talk about it, when we bless it, we are creating space for it to actually be born. And this is what makes Judaism's version of blessing, this is what our approach to blessing, it makes it different from, I would say, secular culture, right? Because a blessing is something that you give, and so it's received, right? It's to give and receive. But in the Jewish way of thinking about blessing, it's not something that we wait for. It's like, imagine when we say, oh, the blessing came true, right? So like there's an interaction, there's an exchange, and then something happened. Like when this resolves, I will have received the blessing, or when this heals, or when this finally makes sense. But that's not what blessing is. In Yiddishkeit, we believe that blessing is a form of creation. And if you think about it, even in English, the suffix ing is active, right? To like behaving, right? Buying, shopping, running. It's an active form. So blessing. But we talk about blessing in English as if it's something to be received. No, it's something to do. It's a form of creation. It's not an outcome. And in Judaism, we believe that the one who blesses is already standing inside the blessing. They happen simultaneously. It's not something that has yet to come true. It's something we are creating as we speak. Because blessing is not passive. It's an act of becoming. We don't wait for blessing. We enter its frequency. In fact, we create its frequency. You know, in this dark time of winter, a lot of us are feeling the squeeze, whatever that squeeze is, right? And there's this teaching that we're all familiar with, this pasuk, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu makdim refuah lefnei hamaka, right? It's Chazal. Hashem gives us the medicine before the illness. And nobody likes that teaching. Because if it was true, we wouldn't need people to say it to us at shiva houses and in hospital rooms, right? If it was true, what we're going through wouldn't hurt like this. If it was true that Hashem gave us the medicine before the pain, we would have answers, we would have clarity, and we would definitely have relief. But in Judaism, medicine and relief are not the same thing. The Hebrew word for healing is refuah. Refuah doesn't mean medicine. Trufa is medicine. We conflate this all the time. We use Hebrew words very easily as if we know what they mean, but it's not. Refuah doesn't mean like, oh, an end to the pain. See, we're in the magic pill generation. Give me Ozempic, you know, give me the magic pill, end the pain. Refuah doesn't mean to end the pain. Healing is not about that. Healing means to restore, to come back into alignment. So again, it's an active process. I looked this up online before I came here. I was like, couldn't remember my diktuk lessons. I'm like, is refuah a noun or a verb? So when you look it up online, it'll tell you that refuah is a verb, but it's a weird verb. It's not a verb, it's a noun. It'll tell you that it's a noun. But it's one of those weird ones. Because trufa is a noun. Trufa is medicine. You can take trufa. Rofe is a doctor. But he practices refuah, which is the art of healing, right? The art of a cure. But it's an art. It's not a passive process. It's not a passive thing. It's an evolving. It's an evolution. No, it's not quite a noun or a verb. Because the art of refuah is to be consciously involved. You have to take an active part in this process in creating space for what's to come. And when we say that Hashem gives us refuah lefnei hamaka, Hashem didn't give us trufa lefnei hamaka. He gave us refuah. He gave us the ability. He gave us the process. The process of unfolding before we needed it to unfold. So what's really happening is Hashem gave us the medicine in seed form. Not complete, not in magic pill form where you swallow it and it's done. In seed form. He says you're going to go on an arc. You're going to go on a journey of refuah. It's an evolving process. And seeds are buried. You ever heard the expression, what we go through is what we grow through, right? So what we go through is our laboratory for discovering what we're aligning to. Because refuah is an alignment process. It's coming back into alignment with health. It's coming into alignment with who we are, who we're meant to be. Now, according to Sefer Yetzirah, every month has a sense that we're evolving, healing, rectifying, talking about refuah. And the month of Shvat deals with the sense of taste, of tam. And it's funny because in the winter time, you don't really think of taste. Taste is spring. You're thinking of vibrant fruits, of biting into strawberries and the juice dripping down your chin. Winter? Oh, the only things that grow in winter are carob, the Buxer Bime, right? You're not thinking, what are the winter fruits? I mean, I know it's 2026. You can walk into pomegranate or breadberry and get anything you want these days. But what do you think when you're thinking of fruits, when you're thinking of taste? It's not in the winter. So what is it about taste that we're rectifying in Shvat? So in Tehillim it says, Tamu ru'u ki tov Hashem. Taste and see that Hashem is good. Really? Anyone ever tasted Hashem? Everyone has questions. We're seeking God. We want to find God. We want to know God. We want to see Him. We want to feel Him. Have you ever heard anyone say, I would really like to taste God? I mean, of course, there's always that person who bites into a pastry and is like, oh my God, I don't know if that's what Tehillim has meant. I know you're all thinking it, No, and I know I don't look like that kind of person, but I don't think that that's what Torah HaMelech meant in Tehillim. But it's such a weird thing to say about Hashem. Not that I'm trying to understand Him, not that I'm trying to prove Him. I just want to taste Him. So what is taste? What is taste? Why? How does this even come into anything? So taste is one of those weird senses because in order to taste, you have to engage with something so deeply. You have to put something in your mouth in order to taste it. It's a very high level of trust. Only a toddler has that level of trust. They'll put anything into their mouth. They trust anything that goes in. They don't know the difference. They're pretty confident that they can swallow screws. We've been there before. They're pretty confident that whatever they're going to put in there is going to work. But adults, we're you look at a table and you're a little more discerning. Okay, it might be the calories, but still, it's you're not so sure you want to put that in. See, with smells or with sound, you don't really interact in that way. With taste, you're much more discerning because it requires trust. It requires a willingness to receive something before you know how it's going to land with you. So trust requires a certain faith in the body. What kind of faith? Well, every month, not just rectifies a sense, it also rectifies a part of the body. And the part of the body that Shvat rectifies is the kerkavan, which is the part of the digestive system, like the esophagus, part of the digestive system. I was looking it up. I was like, what does the Talmud say a kurkavon is? Like, what is the art scroll definition? It's like the gizzards. I'm like, do humans have gizzards? I think only turkeys, like fowls, have gizzards. But it's basically the digestive system. In Shvat, we are rectifying the digestive system. What is it about taste and the digestive system? What's happening inside of us? The work of Shvat is not about what we're taking in, but rather about how we're taking it in. How we process what we're taking in and what's already inside of us. Think about it. Two people can eat the same food. One is nourished, one is satiated, one is hungry. It didn't even taste the food, didn't even feel the food, or it didn't do anything for them. Two people can live the same life, can go through the same things. One becomes bitter, and one becomes a blessing. Same input, but very different output due to their differences in inner processing. That's Shvat. And the Kirkavan, which is, again, it's a physical part of our body, but every physical part of our body has a spiritual representation, right? It has a meaningful representation. And digestion means making meaning. What are you doing with what you have taken in? Turning your experiences into nourishment. So bracha, blessing, and refuah, healing, doesn't come from what happens to us. It comes from how we metabolize what happens to us. And Shvat, or Chodesh Shvat, and Tu B'Shvat, also comes at a very interesting time of year, not just that it's winter, but it's in Shovavim. Are any of you familiar with Shovavim? The 6 weeks where a lot of men get very busy learning about all the halachos of Kedusha, right? They're very busy with this. It's a time of restraint. It's like we're going to go inside, it's winter time, and we're going to re-identify ourselves with what it means to be pure, be holy, be separate. What does separation, what does restraint have to do with taste and digestion? Well, when you're separate, when you're empty, when you're holding back, then you start asking questions. What do I want to eat next, right? If you're not just eating blindly anything that's in front of you and you're holding back, what do I want to eat? Why do I want to eat it? What am I expecting to feel when I eat it? What am I expecting the food to resolve inside of me? How do I want it to nourish me? Do I perhaps confuse comfort with nourishment? Right? Questions that a lot of us ask ourselves when we approach new diets. But Shvat is the diet. If you're going to start a diet,
you would know.
I would know. I listened to you all my life. Well, Shvat, if you're going to start a diet, Shvat is probably the time to start it, because like it's missable. You're going to have the right energy fueling you. So then when we eat again after a period of restraint, we can taste more deeply. We can truly appreciate what we're bringing in. And what are we tasting? Well, we're tasting God. In Devarim, I'm going to try to read this without stumbling. In Devarim it says, "L'man hodiyacha, ki lo ala lechem levado yichya ha'adam." We're not surviving only on bread. "Ki al kol motzei pi Hashem yichya ha'adam." We're living al devar Hashem, like everything that Hashem utters. We want Torah, we want the word of Hashem, we want the experience of Hashem. That's what makes us alive. The real pleasure of eating doesn't just come from eating physical food. It comes from the spark of aliveness, the divine vitality that's hidden inside it. I mean, really, what is it about food that is a life force? It keeps you alive. And, you know, science calls it calories. They call it, you know, it gives you energy. And they're trying to break it down to which food gives you which kind of calories. But the fact is, Hashem invested food with the ability to sustain your life force. There's an actual godliness in the food you're eating. And our mission in Shvat is to unveil that godliness. And Rav Meilich of Lizensk, this is so fascinating. He teaches something that is so radical, you would never have expected this to come from Rav Meilich of Lizensk. Because if you know anything about Rav Meilich of Lizensk, is that he was an ascetic. He, you know, separated himself from all the pleasures of life. And this is what he said about food. It's not only holy to eat for the sake of serving God later. Like, oh, if I eat now, I'm going to fill my body and I'm going to have the energy. He says it's even higher to taste God in the food itself. Like Rav Meilich, of all people, yes, when you're eating the food, don't just tell yourself, I'm just gearing this up for later. That is Shvat consciousness. Hashem is in the actual food that I'm eating. What else is Shvat consciousness? Shabbos consciousness. I'm sure it's not escaped your notice that Shvat and Shabbat have a similar sounding. Yes, one is a tough and one is a tess. But in Assyria, the 11th month of the year is called Sabbata, which is Shabbos. So there's something about the Shabbos consciousness that's in Shabbat as well. On Shabbos, eating is holy, right? We're commanded to eat. We're commanded to eat good food, a lot of food, excess, basar. Come on, who needs fish and meat at the same meal? Like, it's a lot. You know, they're both main dishes. And no, Shabbos, enjoy your food. Put away special foods for Shabbos. And the Arizal says that on Shabbos, there's no waste. Everything you eat on Shabbos, everything you partake in on Shabbos is holy. And the Zohar calls a wise person Shabbos. A wise person is someone who can carry that frequency of everything is holy, everything can be elevated into every day. That's the Shabbos consciousness, into everything you do. Someone who can enjoy the physical without it being material. Someone who can eat and be satisfied, not because they stuff their belly, but because they taste and appreciate the meaning. So many, many years ago, my mother did introduce me and say that I am the person who wrote Miracle Right a long, long, long time ago. It was a book I wrote when I was 21 about when I was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 16. And when I was first diagnosed, I remember asking my doctor, Dr. Michael Harris, I told him, just tell me when this is over. You know, it's just going to be, what, a couple of months, a year of my life? Just I'm a good girl. Just I'll mark it on the calendar. I'll show up every day for my treatments. I'm never going to give you a problem. I'm never going to complain. Just tell me when it's over. And he was a very, very special person, Dr. Michael Harris. He passed away earlier this year. His first Yahrzeit is coming up soon, I think in March. And he said, in May, not March, and he said, I'll tell you the truth. For there are some people, they ask the same question that you're asking. They want it to be over. And it's true. Like, I'll give them an answer. It'll be over for you one day and you'll move on. He says, you don't strike me as the kind of person who wants that kind of answer. It's not going to sit well with you. So I'll tell you the truth that you need to hear. It's never going to be over. There's never going to be a single day that you are going to wake up and not remember that you are a cancer survivor. It's going to become part of your identity. It's going to become part of how you live your life. And it's going to become part of the life that you are going to create after cancer. It's not pre-cancer and it's not post-cancer. It's an evolution, and cancer is going to be part of that consciousness. And he was right. I've never gotten over it. Not because I'm sick, but because I evolved, and I evolved because of what I went through. And I took that with me. I didn't leave it behind. I became someone who knows how to live with all the lessons that that time in my life taught me. I'm not past it. I'm emanating from it, you know? Like, I'm still in it. I don't identify with it, but I identify because of it. And he taught me such a secret, the secret to presence, to not running, the secret of the knees, right, of the berkayim. Because what do we use our knees for? To walk, to run. And he taught me, no, don't walk, don't run, just stay. Stay right here, live in this moment, create meaning, and become a blessing from this place. That is what we mean when we say beneath the blessing. It's the blessing beneath the blessing. And when we're hurting, we all want answers, right? We want solutions, we want medicines, we want the magic pill, we want the trufa. But in Judaism, we don't believe in that. That's not who we are. And the thing is, when it comes to this idea that we had the medicine before the pain, that doesn't work. Because like I said, if we had it, we wouldn't have the pain. We wouldn't experience it. There is something about the pain that we go through that helps us become the medicine. Right? Our new problems, new solutions cannot be found from our old self. Hashem doesn't give us answers. The medicine that he gives us is the blessing of becoming. It's only later, right, after we've been through what we've been through, that we can look back and realize, oh, like, this is who I was turning into. The medicine wasn't given to me. The medicine was me. I was always going to be my own medicine, but it was started off as a seed, and I had to become that person who can bring myself to that place of beyond, right, to the cure. And that's the secret, again, of blessing, of getting down on our knees at times when nothing makes sense and choosing to become that person, to become the frequency of the life that we're wanting to envision for ourselves, the life that we're wanting to create. So Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat is 40 days before the beginning of creation. What's the beginning of creation? Aleph Nisan. Some of Farshim say that Adam HaRishon, right, his birthday, the beginning of all, was Aleph Nisan, which means that Hashem started creating 5 days before Aleph Nisan, which was 25 Adar, right? Which means that 40 days before 25 Adar is Tu B'Shvat. Any of you familiar with 40 days before, right, conception, right? There's a 40 days is a conception period. So what are we blessing when we bless the trees? We're not blessing the birth. We're blessing that act of love. It's the first desire to create, the first moment, the first flash of, wait, I want to bring something forth. That is blessing. Blessing exists before the manifestation, right? Love exists before the proof. That's what we're stepping into this month, and that's what birthdays are. Bringing it back to birthdays. What are we really celebrating when we pull out the cake? I mean, for me, it's going to be 3 cakes this month. I don't know what I was thinking. 3 kids in Shvat, and then one, like, right after an Adar. What are we really celebrating? What is so major about your birthday? What have you done? You've turned, like, my son is turning 4. He's going to be, like, you pull out the cake, he turned 4 5 minutes ago. What are you exactly celebrating? You're celebrating a recognition of what is possible, of who we might become if we allow ourselves to dig deep. And this is blessing. It's a choice. It's not an outcome. And ironically, by choosing blessing, we already get to experience it. I'm going to run you through, if we can take a minute, I'm going to run you through a quick meditation. Some of you who have been in my classes, lectures, have already done this one with me before, so you'll have the pleasure of doing it again. And I recognize some familiar faces. Hi, people. I know you people. I'm trying not to smirk at you and smile at you while I'm giving my lecture, but I see your faces. So we're going to take a moment. I'll continue talking. So if we could do this quietly. Do we have cups as well?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're each going to get a mini water bottle and a cup. So we'll take a minute. We'll take a minute to help have those passed around, and I'll keep talking while we pass those. While you're waiting, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my book. So I already mentioned that I'm the author of Miracle Ride. Okay. Miracle Ride was a journal that I wrote when I was 16 and diagnosed with cancer. And I didn't know at the time when I was keeping a journal that one day my journal was going to be published and become a bestseller that went into 8 printings, and it was going to launch me. And on the way here, Malki was telling me, she's like, did you ever think that you were going to be famous one day? Like, Malki has watched me grow up. And she was like, did you ever think that this was going to be your life? No, I think we all have secret, like, visions of being a movie star, you know, one day. But no, I'm an introvert. I'm happier in a hoodie and sweatpants. But you need a cup. You're going to need a water bottle and a cup. Yes, perfect. If we could just do that quietly. So while I was going through this really difficult time in my life, I kept a journal. And as you could imagine, I was really ill. I wasn't taking the time to write a lot. But somehow that journal became a very best-selling book. And it changed a lot of people's lives completely unexpectedly. If I had known, maybe I would have written it better. You know, maybe I would have written more like poignant thoughts there. And for years, for 20 years now, people have been asking me, when are you writing your next book? And I've been living in that like insecurity of, that's why I told my mother, please introduce me as the most mediocre speaker that you know, that I'm only here because you got me for free. And you know, when she started, like, she wants to start this Rosh Hashanah, this, you know, this Rosh Chodesh gathering, and like she couldn't afford a speaker, so like whatever, there's a speaker in the family, you know. I'm like, please introduce me as mediocre so the pressure is off. But the pressure has been on for 20 years for me to write another.
Joey Hayward would call me
on. Well, right. So right, next time, and then I'm gonna feel terrible.
I'll tell him if Ali spoke for us first. So
right. So then, yeah, it can only go up from there, exactly. Yeah. So you know, so I've been living in that like crushing, crippling, you know, insecurity of, oh my gosh, I'll never write another book, and people have been waiting for me to write a book. So I finally wrote another book. Actually, it's a book that I ask other people to write. I finally produced something called a 5-year journal. It's, if you open it up, you have the opportunity on each page to write 1 line a day for 5 years. It's what we call a journal of becoming. when I thought back to what it was that made Miracle Right, my diary, so amazing, what was it about my book that people really loved? It was just my diary. It was Shvat. It was my evolution. It was me showing up every single day on my knees, literally bent over a toilet, puking, on my knees, saying, I'm just going to journal. I don't know where this journal is going to take me. I don't know how my story will end. And it doesn't stop me from showing up every day. And every time I reflect on what was so magical about Miracle Ride, I think it was that. I don't think it was just that I was funny. And I don't think it was just that I had cancer. And 20 years ago, no one spoke about cancer. I think it was the miracle of somebody quietly showing up even before she knew how their story was going to end. So 5 years ago, someone introduced me to a journal like this. And I loved it. I loved the idea. And I have been showing up every single day for 5 years journaling. And I just completed my first 5-year journal. And upon completion, I said, you know, I wish I could give everybody this gift of Miracle Ride, the gift of becoming, the gift of Shva. And so I produced my own 5-year journal. And they just landed in the U.S. last week. I'm so excited. And this is that miracle of, again, being able to show up and say, I don't know who I'm going to be. We all have visions for ourselves, or we would hope we have visions for ourselves. Where are these next 5 years going to take us? But you know what? You don't recognize the blessing and you don't recognize the miracle unless you're looking for it. Because right now, where you are right now is 5 years further from the you that you were. You can just dismiss that. It's your bitachon chat. It's 5 years, 5 years beyond where you were 5 years ago. How many of you remember where you were 5 years ago in the winter in 2020? Right? Oh, it was 2021, but we all remember winter 2020. Could you imagine in winter 2020 if I told you here, winter 2026, we'd be here, right? And you can't appreciate the blessing. Could you imagine as we were going through COVID, if we knew that there's no social distancing here, the panic and the pain and the terror, and if I showed you a picture of this room 5 years ago, the amount of appreciation we would have, but we don't, because we forget. And that is the lesson in Shvat. Get down on your knees and start digging deep and trust in the blessing even before it arrives. So we're going to do a little meditation together. And if you're not a meditator, because some of you already told me, like, I heard you're into like the woo-woo stuff, like the heebie stuff. What if I'm not like weird? It's fine. You know, you don't have to be. But we'll just do like a couple of minutes together and see where this takes you. So there are instructions for this. Let me tell you the instructions. You're each given a water bottle and a cup. What I'm going to ask you each to do is pour into your cup about, like, you know, half the cup. Do not pour the whole water bottle. You're going to need the other half of the water bottle for soon, okay? So half the water bottle only. Very good. Motor skills. I have a 4-year-old. They're the things we notice. Yechida, that's a very big half cup. You already know where we're going with this. Okay. No one needs the bathroom here, right?
Not yet.
Thanks. It's good that we're not recognizing our sense of sound and hearing, just taste. Let me show you what it means when we talk about rectifying taste and we talk about finding Hashem in the food itself and the power of not just blessing, but the art of blessing, putting you into the blessing. So if you can, I'm going to ask you to put down the water bottle. I want it consciously out of your, like, reach. Put it down on the floor. Just notice where it is because we're going to pick it up again. And find a way to center yourself with your water. This is a meditation for those of you who've never meditated, are not interested. Not interesting, don't think you can meditate. You can all do this one because you've done it before. We're all just going to make the bracha of Shahakol together, but we're going to do it in a way that you may never have done it before, all right? So I'm going to have you start by closing your eyes. And if you don't trust me and you'd like to keep your eyes open, I'm not going to punish you. But if you can close your eyes, you don't have to touch the water. I know some of you will have your water on your lap, that's fine, but for those of you who are on the table, you don't have to touch it. Just bring your attention to it, even as you close your eyes, and I want you to envision. Okay, we're saying the bracha together. You're going to just follow along quietly. We start with the first word, which is baruch. And you already know what baruch is, right? It's brecha. And it's also this this posture, this position of supplication, of getting down on your knees. So whatever Baruch makes you think of, whether it's a pool of water, a waterfall, or even prayer. And if you're not visual, and you're not good at following along, you can just slow down and think of the letters. Bez, Resh, Vav, Chaf. And then we move into Ata. And as we say Ata, there's a recognition that the minute you say you, who is the you? We are standing before someone, we're blessing someone. We are engaging with Ata. Who is Ata? Hashem. Yud, and then the Hey, above, and then another Hey. And did you know that to say Yud Kei Vav Kei is really just an inhale and an exhale? The Yud and the Hey are the inhale, in through your nose. And then the Vav and the Hey are the... And who is this Hashem? Elokeinu. Do you know what divinity is in Elokeinu? Elokeinu is din, but not din as in judgment, as in order. He runs this entire world. Everything that happens, everything that's going to happen, everything that needs to happen. This is who we're talking to. And then comes Melech. This is not just, you know, Hashem Elokeinu. Melech. Have you ever stood in front of the king before? Do you know what that would mean? Have you ever been in the presence of someone that demands presence? Have you ever stopped to imagine what that would feel like? Maybe you have felt it. Maybe you've stood in front of a Rav or a mentor, someone you've looked up to. But have you ever stood in front of a king? And then comes Ha'olam. Whatever you imagine standing in front of, whatever experience you've ever had of that intimidation, standing in presence, amplify that. Not by 100, not by 1,000, not even by 1,000,000, by the infinite. Because this is Melech Olam. Do you know what it means? Melech Olam? Shehakol. That everything you can imagine, everything you can comprehend, everything you have not even begun to think of, to feel, to know, everything, down to the minutest detail, and also the greatest plans. Nihia. Are and always will be. Bidvaro. As a result of him, his speech, his utterances. His blessing. And when you're ready, you can lift the glass of water to your lips and taste. And I did not ask you to pour too much because I would like for us to reuse our cups. If we can empty our cups. And drink from the other half now of the bottle. I would prefer you don't drink it straight from the bottle because then you're going to accuse me of plastic. Like if you can, you know, keep the experiment going and put it in the exact same cup. And without breaking your concentration, because I still want you focused on, again, taste. When you're ready, taste the water that you did not bless. You don't have to make another shahakal. We already said shahakal. Taste the second half of the water. Interesting? Is there something that you noticed? What did you notice?
It's not as sweet.
I thought it was sweet. It's not as thick.
It's not as thick.
It's not as alive.
It's not as sweet. Did you taste it? You did? And? You did? It tastes like metal. My mother was like, does this meditation really work? And I'm like, every time. It better work. It does. It tastes like metal. You ever heard that your waters have like metals, right? Heavy metals in them? You just tasted it. And that's your geyser water, right? Mm-hmm. It tastes like plastic. It tastes flat. It tastes not as alive, not as vibrant. And you just did this. You made a bracha that you make many, many times throughout the day, the bracha of shahakal. It's not a fancy meditation. And you actually changed something in the water you drank. By the way, I've done this meditation on hundreds of people. And it works every time. I've even done it on teenagers. And it works every time. And I live for the experience of everyone's faces at the end going, whoa. This is the lesson of Shvat. We're waiting for the blessing. You know, you go to a mekubal and you get a blessing and you're just waiting. You're waiting for the blessing to come true. And you don't realize that the blessing is the lived experience. You drinking the water, you blessed and were blessed simultaneously. You already changed the frequency. By choosing to bless, by choosing to be in the blessing, you can already experience it. You are changing the vibration of everything. So this is Shvat. This is what we're taking forward. This is what we're celebrating, our ability to do this and to bring this out into the world. So thank you, everybody. This has been a blessing. Thank you.